I am the best wrestler in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day because Paul Heyman saw something in me that nobody else wanted to admit. I've grabbed so many of Vincent K. McMahon's imaginary brass rings that it's finally dawned on me that they're just that. They're completely imaginary. The only thing that's real is me, and the fact that day in and day out, for almost 6 years, I have proved to everybody in the world that I am the best on this microphone, in that ring, even at commentary. Nobody can touch me.
In the world here with a brand new episode of CM Jew's Wrestling Reviews. This is episode 60. I almost said 40 there for a second, but I digress because on this episode we cover the second Raw of 1998 along, which was the go-home show for the 1998 Royal Rumble. And speaking of which, the main review, we cover the Royal Rumble from 1998, which saw The Rock versus Ken Shamrock for the Intercontinental Championship, Shawn Michaels versus The Undertaker in a casket match, and of course, the Royal Rumble match featuring Stone Cold Steve Austin. All that and more on this episode of CMJ's Wrestling Reviews. So yes, episode 60. As I get back on track, glad you have made it this far. I guess first thing to go over, of course, is the news of the week. Because we have a couple of tidbits I want to touch on. Wrestling-wise, one of the big ones is that Shinsuke Nakamura, but let me do it the Kenny Omega way. Nakamura! I don't know, I just keep watching that video and I love Kenny Omega. You know, Jim Ross said he reminds him of a Kevin Pillman, and you know, hearing that, I can definitely see it. It's that like sort of like almost unattached, unbridled lunacy that it's like, you know, by the way, Dean Ambrose had sort of the same thing as well, so it's like that crazy gene is like, you don't know what you're gonna get. It's almost Joker-like in a way. But yeah, I can't stop watching that video where they x-ray AJ Styles from the Bullet Club. Not because they beat up AJ Styles, but just because Kenny Omega is just so entertaining there. It's like, how you know this? I am not a junior. I will not challenge Kushida. You know I'm not a junior. I'm coming after your title, Nakamura. Yeah. But the interesting about that title, New Japan has decided to strip Shinsuke Nakamura of the title, which gives even more credence to the fact that he's coming to the WWE. And someone made a good point. It's like, there is some question, maybe Ring of Honor or TNA, but let's cut this right here. Nakamura's leaving New Japan. He's leaving for the WWE. He's not going to go on Pop TV. He's not going to be on New TV. You know, New Japan a bit at 3 a.m. in the morning, but still, you know, they had a television contract. You know, if he's leaving, he's going for big money. And the only people that have that is WWE. It just makes so much sense, and it's so excited. It's like, he's apparently ended with new... All his final dates are up by the end of January. This probably means he's not going to be in the Royal Rumble, but he is due to be flying to America apparently soon. Where more than likely, he's going to be going over the WWE, you know, physical, check out everything's all right before they finally sign him. It's like, oh my god, it's actually happening. It's just like, I want to queue up the Maximilian clip of him reacting to the announcement to Final Fantasy VII Remake from E3. Like, oh my god, it's actually happened! That hit the right side button! So, yeah, that's very interesting. More scarier news, though, is there is a big rumor that's been going around. Particularly from the blog of Doom. I can't remember the gentleman's name, so I apologize for the website. But apparently he published an email from... This is a rumor about Daniel Bryan being released this coming week. And apparently this comes from a person who overheard another person talking to a third party about processing a release. Which, in and by itself, is very suspicious to believe. Like, okay, so you have... First of all, especially in this day and age of job security, why would you put your job on the line like that? Why? Why? Because, second of all, and to take this account into any reality is, you know, this is a person overhearing another person talking to a third party about a process. Like, that just seems like a lie right there. Like, I'm not doing it, but I heard this, like... And someone made the comment, I read an article, that this may be a leak to hide Daniel Bryan coming back, which would be great. But, it caused several, you know, Dave Meltzer being one of them, to say that they've talked to their sources and it's absolutely untrue. And it just makes no sense. It's like, even if you don't necessarily want him to wrestle anymore, WWE is going to do everything they can to keep him, because Daniel Bryan is such an asset out of the ring. You know, he's been going all over the world for them. He's been doing everything they could possibly ask for him. You know, we talk about this over and over again. It's a sad situation. It's a hard situation. And I don't blame WWE for this. They're being careful, but they have to be. And we've talked about this before. It's this lawsuit. It's a lawsuit, and I guarantee you, they know that judges want to get them. These lawyers want... They're these people that just want to nail them just because they're wrestling. Let's not mince anything here when we talk about this. There are a lot of snooty, elitist people who hate wrestling. They absolutely hate wrestling. You want to know why WCW fell? There are many things that ultimately contributed to it. But if you listen to Eric Bischoff in the interviews he's done, like on JBL's Legends, if you listen to Kevin Nash on like Legends of Wrestling, you listen to all the people talking about how awful that place was, like mid-98 onward, which was pretty much after the merger. What's been called the worst merger in business history of American Online with Time Warner, where they basically undercut and took the entire company from Ted Turner. You know, pretty much, it's pretty obvious that there's a lot of people who are already within Ted, but more importantly, the AOL owners who, listening to, hearing about them, they're absolute assholes who looked down on wrestling, hated it, and wanted to get it off their network. They hated wrestling. Wrestling was always that southern redneck thing, and there's no place for it on civil TV, because we're a bunch of elitist pigs. And I guarantee you there's a lot of people that hate Vince McMahon, that hate professional wrestling, hate that it's constantly one of the highest rated shows every week on the network. You know, I remember we're going into the spring school session, and you know, last spring I took an intro to television and talking to him, and he talked about like how constantly and he said I wasn't a wrestling fan, but he said he found it interesting how WWE was like always at the top of the ratings. And it's just one of those things where there are people that just, and not that he expressed any hate towards wrestling, but he seemed confused why it was always there. And there's just people that just don't get wrestling, don't get why it's always at the top, even when it's doing as bad as someone is now. But still, the fact of the matter is, you know, professional wrestling will always be looked down upon by the elitist. Why was I even talking about this? I kind of lost my place. There goes the train off the tracks. Oh, well. But what we were talking about was Daniel Bryan. And just, it just makes no sense for them to give him up when he's such a vital, vital part. And so, yeah. So, so it's a rumor, and it just makes no sense. And like I said, it's this, everything to do with Daniel Bryan comes with WWE being ultra super careful about, you know, this lawsuit, because like I said, there are people out to get it, and I'm not saying that as a conspiracy theory, because it's not a theory, it's the truth. There are people that want to nail because they're wrestling. Personally, the things I would do to that lawyer that continuously is continuing this lawsuit, I think the thing a lot of wrestling fans would do to that lawyer, but you know, that's here nor there. But that's pretty much the news. This week's Raw was pretty uneventful. I didn't go back and watch TNA Impact. Well, more to the truth is, was really tired at the beginning of this week, so like, I actually didn't make it to the end of Raw. Like, I got to the main event, started watching it, like, I know what's gonna happen. Lesnar's gonna come down and destroy everybody, because of course it's Lesnar. And Shin, I know you're listening. I know you did a video and you love your man Brock Lesnar. As I said, I hate Brock. Like, there's nothing interesting about him. It's the same old shit over and over again. And I understand everybody loves seeing him destroy stuff. But you know what? It's like the only reason I even care about Brock Lesnar showing up is that it means that Paul Heyman shows up. And I am a Heyman guy. But I knew this episode, I went to sleep, and sure enough, I wake up next morning, and what the hell happened? Oh, Brock Lesnar came down and destroyed everything, and he will be in the Royal Rumble. Gee, what a surprise. So, of course, Dave Meltzer is also reporting, by the way, that the main event of Mania is going to be Triple H and Roman Reigns for the title. So, that means Roman Reigns probably going to win it. But brings up the question, whoever eliminates Brock Lesnar in the Rumble, that's who's probably facing him at Mania. So that's going to be very interesting to see. And again, I've said before, you know, first of all, he's not going to be number one. So it could be the luck of the draw or whatever. But it's going to be very, if they do it right, they can build Roman Reigns winning as just a getting up on the authority. So there's that in the works. And of course, I'm going to try to catch it again next week, but like the first episode didn't leave me any like motivated to watch the next this week's episode of Impact. And also there was the Flair Austin podcast that I, you know, on the network that happened after Raw that I didn't see. But I heard it was pretty much a lot of stuff that had been said before. I still have to go back and watch it. Maybe next week I'll be able to talk more about it. I actually didn't even watch NXT yet. But I've read some of the things that happened. And I also know some things. Like, I know there's... I'm more excited about next week's episode and the episode after that because of certain debuts and certain matches that are supposed to happen. And it's not that I hate the Divas division. I definitely have to... I'm going to probably watch it tonight. Watch the episode to see, you know, what's going to happen with, the Divas Battle Royal. Because it is exciting. But, you know, a lot of it... I heard there were some good matches I have to watch. It's just, I don't know. This week I was really tired. And you ever have a week where you just weren't into watching wrestling? Strangely enough, this has kind of been that week. I don't know. Maybe I've just been overloaded. I don't know. But, yeah. So, next week I'll probably talk more about NXT, its build-up, more of the Flair Austin and all those things. So, why don't we take a quick break right here, and we'll shift gears. And when we come back, I'm going to talk for a couple minutes about the Raw that happened on January 12th. 1998. Take it on the road. And welcome back, and let's get right into it. Of course, we're talking about the Raw that took place on January 12th, 1998. And this was pretty much kind of like the week before. Again, I kind of made mention to it towards the end of the review last week. How watching these two Raws, it's very evident about, you know, just how much... Yeah, I would have been still watching WCW Nitro if I was still watching at the time. Because, again, this is during a time where I wasn't watching any wrestling. But for the most part, it was one of those things to where I wouldn't have been watching at the time. Let me go back. I would have been watching Nitro at the time because, again, I'm more of a... maybe it's hard to say that. This is the more difficult thing about it. Is I'm, of course, looking at this... in a, almost a way of how, not just how I am now, but also how was I when I came back in 99. And really, also how was I in the thousands where I became extremely spoiled by really good wrestling. So to go back to an era of the WWE that, while successful, or at least at this point in time, had really bad wrestling. Like, you every segment... It's not... I mean, again, this is the faction point, and it's a lot of tag team, and it's short matches that are just a lot of punchy-punchy, brawly-brawly, and yeah. It's more story-driven, and, I mean, that is WWE's strength. Even with these early episodes, which probably aren't the best of the year, by any means, it's one of those things where you can tell story... is definitely WWE's strong point over WCW. But I have to couple the effect, like, if I was still watching, would I be more interested in the story? Or would I be more interested in wrestling? And that's hard. If I was more interested in wrestling, I definitely would be choosing WCW. Because, especially with the Cruiserweights, they would be having the better wrestling matches. But here, even with the stories, like... it's a few stories, and I guess that's the thing about it, is like, for me, the highlights of this episode are, of course, sort of the three big stories, one of which has several stories mixed in with it, that are going on, that are sort of telling it, and there's a fourth one, the Sable, Of course, that's because it's Sable, and, you know, I am a male. You know, even at 30, I'm still that type of male. And as I've said before, how the hell she ended up with Brock Lesnar, God help this woman. But that's still in its early stages. That's building up, because that's pretty much, it's still the feud with Tom Brandy. Although it was interesting in that segment, you had Goldust, who'd come out later and wrestle, and what was not a very interesting match, but he would come down during, in fact, during Tom Brandy, it was Mark Merrill versus Vader, actually. And Goldust comes out dressed as Sable. That's like, I don't need to see this. I should be the artist formerly known as Goldust. And then, of course, what is it with WWE, by the way, in coconuts? You know, he apparently, to make himself as busty as Sable, he stuffs his bra with coconuts. I'm like, what in God's name is it with WWE and goddamn coconuts? You know, Piper uses them. Kalito has used them. You hear me have Goldust use them. Like, goddamn, what? Stop using the coconuts! Because I have a hard time believing that a coconut's going to knock out Vader. Use something I'll believe, like a cannonball. Though I don't know how he'd fit a cannonball. Well, there are cannonballs that are about the size of those coconuts. So, yeah, you could use a cannonball. That's kind of funny, but, you know, and it's building. A lot of these stories that we kind of remember are still in their building phase right now. Like, the Nation of Domination story, again, it's more of that Rock taking more power, you know? And I really enjoyed that, because I saw it coming. It's like, even though I've not watched it, like, the way he says, like, Mark Henry's going to turn. I knew Mark Henry at some point joined the Nation. I'm like, is this it? Because the way Rock's doing, I won't be surprised if Mark turns on, sure enough, there he does. Turns on Ken Shamrock. Well, Rock kept his promise. He tore that shirt off. And it's very interesting to see, like, wait a minute. You know, like, I didn't say he could join. I'm the leader. I say who joins. And, of course, this would lead towards something that happened during Royal Rumble, where, like, it's like, look, I don't even like you. I didn't even bring you into here. It was Rock who did. So, you had that storyline that was building. And, again, that built towards the main event match. Or, not the main event, but the, or at least the main, one of the sort of championship matches that would happen in the Rumble between Rock and Ken Shamrock. So, that built. Then you had sort of the DX, the Shawn Michaels, Undertaker, D-Generation X storyline. Again, this is where you had different stories, because you had Triple H and his feud going with Owens. You had Shawn's with Taker, DX, of course, being crazy. And, of course, Undertaker and his deal is with his brother, Kane. And that really all made for a very interesting storyline, because it allowed for multiple uses of DX throughout the night, and I like that. And again, you know, you can see even now just like how good Triple H would be. Like, you could see that future in Triple H, just really how good he would be down the line. And of course, Shawn was just and this was bad Shawn. This was even good Shawn. This was bad Shawn. And I don't mean, like, bad boy. I mean, like, this was, like, a real pain in the ass. Was really struggling at the time, Shawn. And it was really fun to work with. And, of course, it's also fun to see. This is the segment that he has with Undertaker at the end. It's like, you ever watch the Botchamanias? And there's a point where they segue into people talking too much. And they show Taker looking Shawn Michaels in the eye and grabbing him around the neck. Well, it's this Raw that comes from. Because that's where this segment happened. And, of course, DX beating on him. Kane coming down. Of course, Kane coming down and saving The Undertaker. And them having a moment, which I actually like, because I like how it built toward what would happen at the end of the Royal Rumble, which we'll get to. And then, of course, earlier in the show, you had the segment with Owen Hart, which was sort of twofold. Like, again, this took place in Penn State. DX is arriving in a limo. Owen Hart goes in there while Sean and there's like a truck blocking the entrance way, and Sean and China come out to get the truck to move. And while there, Owen sneaks behind and like jumps through the sunroof to try to beat up Triple H. And of course, Sean and China jump in the limousine and then it races away, and they apparently leave Owen Hart somewhere beat up. Of course, not really, but you know. That's what they tell everybody. Till Owen Hart shows on the Titantron and says, bloodied and everything, like, you think you got rid of me? I'm here to kick your ass. Which, by the way, is very interesting. He finally curses, and you could tell he was sort of uneasy with cursing because it was not sort of his thing to do the curse. But, and also I think Owen Hart was built to be a heel. Or Owen Hart works best as a heel. And when you see his best moments in WWE, it was always when he was a heel. Which is very strange for his kind, you know, again, and I really want to watch that DVD. I hear all the time just how kind Owen Hart really was, so it's that funny thing, like, you have these people who are really kind, yet they work best as a heel. And it's one of those things where they're such a good person that, you know, when they get to act as a bad guy, they get to have fun and they get to really enjoy it. But, you know, here you seem a bit uncomfortable to trying to be the badass because he really wasn't that person. And he wasn't kind of feeling it as, like, Stone Cold was, which was the other really good storyline that they were continuing. Stone Cold being hunted by everybody. Like, you know I have a target. And he, you know, that funny segment where he comes out and talks with Michael Cole for an interview. Like, do you have a marker, Michael Cole? Yeah. And draws a target. Like, I know I'm a marked man, so you don't got to come far. And just, you know, continue to beat up people. And then, of course, that segment that, you know, like, Austin, you think Austin has the upper hand, but then Rock and a couple come out and they're able to jump him. And it just, and the chaos is going in the ring, and the live lottery pick doesn't happen, which you knew wasn't going to happen. So it just all led to the chaos that was going to happen for Royal Rumble. Overall, you know, again, I think a bit more better storytelling, because I can talk a bit more about the story here. And I love sort of the setups that ultimately led into the Royal Rumble. But again, the downside is the wrestling really isn't good. And it was hard because, you know, I really didn't want to fast forward. Like, I want to see something, but it's like, again, it's a lot more brawly. Like, there's some bright spot, like watching Taka Michinoku in the main event match. Get to fly around a bit, but still, it was there was a lot more brawly, fighty than technical, because we got to use every word twice now. So, overall, I give this Raw, I'll give it a 3 out of 5. It's a little bit, it's better than last week, so I have to give it up a point and a half, or a half a point up, I should say. But I'm still waiting for better wrestling. And I certainly hope that better wrestling starts to come along sooner. But I'm not holding my breath. Next week is, of course, the fallout from the Rumble. And, of course, Mike Tyson comes to Raw in what is one of the most memorable moments of both Stone Cold's and the Attitude Era. So, yeah, that's going to be next week. With that being said, it's time for the Royal Rumble. Your commentary team would be Jerry Lawler and Jim Ross. Of course, you'd have both a Spanish and a French team. Your interviewer with Michael Cole, ring announcer would be Howard Finkel. Royal Rumble took place on January 18th. 1998, to an attendance of 18,542 in the San Jose Arena in San Jose, California, with the tagline of pain. Just a four-letter word. By the way, sponsored by MCI Communications. Ladies and gentlemen, let's get into Royal Rumble 1998. in the Royal Rumble. We had six matches total. Really no dark matches, actually. A lot of the Sunday Night Heat was, again, building up to the matches that would take place. You know, as Sunday Night Heat, a lot of times was during this era used for. Really not matches, but build up in interviews and things like that. Of course, they would do things like people being attacked to set up injuries that would come into play during the match later. I.e., like, for instance, last year we reviewed Royal Rumble 1999, and during Sunday Night Heat, Mankind was attacked by Rock, and that would come into some play for their match. So, our first match of the night features the artist, formerly known as Cool Dust, with Luna versus Big Bad Von Vader. The match lasted 7 minutes 51 seconds, and I thought it was a good opening match. I enjoyed it a lot more than I thought I would. In fact, I really enjoyed Vader here. And I like that Vader controlled most of it, again, being the bigger man, and Goldust trying to use, trying to get away from him. By the way, I find it interesting here, I faintly remember seeing this match, while reviewing an early 90s WCW. I don't know why. And that's always something I find interesting whenever I see wrestlers that were stars before, like, during the early days of the WCW, before Eric Bischoff took over. And you look at all these stars, and I know that Eric Bischoff said, ultimately, that it wasn't part of their game plan of what they wanted to do, but at the same point in time, it's, I think, also a point to Vince McMahon to what he was able to do. Because, ultimately, even if they had these stars, I don't know if WWE still wouldn't have beaten WCW, because, ultimately, it was about Vince McMahon and his ability to motivate his roster to be better. And the fact that they were able to take all these WCW stars that the people of WCW, because it was more than just Eric Bischoff, who thought they couldn't use them and couldn't fit what they wanted to do. And it was through them that they were able to ultimately beat them back with people like Stone Cold and Goldust and Triple H. And of course, in the mid-card, with people using people like Vader and Farouk. And that just looked really, I find it really, really interesting. But really the highlight of this match, and I think it's really interesting, was Vader keeps going for his bomb, and he missed it once, twice. He goes for a third time. Luna jumps on his back, and the referee decides not to do the disqualification. Vader still climbs the rope, and with Luna on him, does the Vader bomb on Goldust. And of course, Luna falls on her head, then rolls heads. It's really wicked, and Vader gets the 1-2-3. I really like that ending. I thought it was a really cool ending because it was a great way to show Vader's power in that situation. Again, Vader had somebody on his back, and he was still able to do the Vader bomb. Next, we have a six-man tag match. We had Sonny as a special guest referee. We have Max Mini, Mosaic, and Nova versus Battalion, Tarantula, and guess who? El Torito! Da-da-da! Olé! Oh, wait, it's not the same El Torito. It's a fatter El Torito, so it can't be the same. that joke flew. Yeah, we have a mini wrestler named El Torito, but he's really fat. And I'm not saying that to be mean. He really is fat. This was kind of like the year before, and we haven't reviewed Royal Rumble 97 yet. But when we do, we'll talk about in that Royal Rumble match, they had a couple of wrestlers from the AAA promotion as part of a working relationship with WWE. Here, WWE kind of was testing out a mini division. They had been for a couple months. They kind of started in 97. And so here was a six-man tag match. And so you had the smaller guy, the smaller of the minis. This were sort of like as best you could do a David versus Goliath in the mini division. Like, Battalion and Tarantula and El Torito were sort of bigger guys. Like, they were more 5 feet as, or closer to 5 feet as opposed to Max Mini that was closer to 4 feet. And so they were generally the smaller. They also were, like I said, I make the point about him being fatter, but really they were all sort of bigger, fatter mini wrestlers as opposed to Max Mini, Mosaic, Nova. Of course, Max Mini, I say it was either Nova or Max Mini. Wikipedia sort of mixes this up here. But it's, let me see if I can pronounce this right. Of Mascarita Sangreta, who's very famous, and you may have seen him on Lucha Underground, or somebody who looks very like him on Lucha Underground. But he's very famous in wrestling as a very famous mini, and he was here. And the thing about it is, I really enjoyed this match. You know, I kept sitting here watching him as like, wow, I'm really enjoying and digging this match, and this is really fun and fast-paced, and my God, it's something that WWE is of this era was really missing, at least of the Raw that I've been watching. But I kept saying, I'm like, I have a feeling I'm going to say this is like my favorite match until Sunny messed it up. And Sunny definitely did get involved, but she didn't get involved like I did. And at the end of the day, this was a really fun match. It was filled with arm drags and dives and everything. And really the best moment and one of the top moments of the night to me was when, again, it's that classic, like, it's a, you get a bunch of sort of high flyers or whatever together, and there's a moment where they all do diving maneuvers. And it's the Aussie moonsaults and the dives through the ropes and the dive off the top rope and the topo heels. And it's like, I'm really digging this. This is great. Sunny, please don't mess this up. And then she didn't mess it up, to her credit. She did end up getting involved. There's a point where they ended up using her, but of course, against the bad guys. But it didn't really mess the match up, and I really enjoyed it. And of course, Max Mini gets to be with Sunny. It's like, yeah, you might want to get that tested there, player. but certainly everybody's jealous of him, and he's getting to be with Sunny. Like, oh. I guess he's not Mini in everything. But anyways, it was a really fun match, and one of my favorite of the nights. Speaking of one of my favorite matches tonight, our next match, which was actually sort of the set outside of the Royal Rumble, was the second longest match of the night. In fact, really, the other three, there's of the five matches that weren't the Royal Rumble, the main event was the longest, this match was the second longest, and the other three matches, technically the next match is the longest, but only by like 6 seconds. And the shortest match is separated from the third longest match by 11 seconds. So, pretty much all of the three of the matches had pretty standard time around each other. The Rock versus Kim Shamrock, which we're about to talk about for the Intercontinental title, was about a couple minutes longer. And the main event title match was longer. Of course, the Royal Rumble was the longest, but that's sort of unfair to compare. But that really was the longest match tonight at actually 55 minutes and 25 seconds. Unlike 91, where it was 2 minutes, they had dropped it down to 90 seconds. But we'll get to that. Actually, we'll go over that match last, even though it's not the last match of the night. But anyways, The Rock, the current WWF Intercontinental Champion, versus Ken Shamrock. I thought this was a really, really good match, and I thought Rock was really good at his heelish maneuver. Great back and forth, and you know, I every time I watch them wrestle, I find myself really enjoying The Rock versus Ken Shamrock. They really had great chemistry. They really helped showcase each other really good and back and forth, and it just, I was really into this match. And ultimately, I didn't initially know what I thought of the ending, but looking back at it, I really like it now. Because again, it was a great way to show the intelligence of The Rock. Here's The Rock, he brings in the brass knuckles. And when he initially hits Shamrock, doesn't put it in his tights. He puts it in Shamrock's tights. And, of course, Shamrock kicks out. And then when Shamrock gets the win, knowing that what he did, he tells the ref, like, I got hit in the jaw. Check his tights. Check his tights. And when the knuckles are found, it leads to a reversal of the decision. And it's like, it's a really brilliant heel move. Like, you see other heels, they'll use the device to hide in their own pants. But Rock was smart enough, as far as the character in the match, to, like, when he used the brass knucks on Ken Shamrock, to then put it in his tights. So, like, knowing, like, if this backfires, I can always get him disqualified. And it was a great way to continue the feud. This is a feud that would just continue to WrestleMania. So, I really enjoyed that. As I take a sip of some sweet nectar, our next match is the Legion of Doom of Hawk and Animal versus the New Age Outlaws, the current WWF Tag Team Champions. This, by far, was the worst match of the night. It ends by disqualification. It just never felt like the match got off the ground. And it's like, and the thing about watching the New Age Outlaws, who were currently champions at the time, on Raw, the past two Raws, and on this, it's like, everything seemed to be about them taking shortcuts. And it's just like, they just seem to be running around too much rather than wrestling. So, there's that. There's not really much to say about the match in that reason, other than that. It's just like, Animal, ultimately, is the most person to match, and he looks strong. But ultimately, disqualification, they beat up a bit on Animal. I think they had, they did something, I don't know why, but maybe I missed it. They did something to Hawk so he couldn't get in the ring. But ultimately, a disqualification, they leave with the titles. It's just like, it ultimately was the match I ended up shockingly not interested in the most. As I said, even though it's the next match, I'm going to leave it for last, the Royal Rumble. So we'll move on to Shawn Michaels, the current WWF champion with Triple H in China, versus The Undertaker. And this, to bring it interesting, you know, this would be the last time they would face each other until WrestleMania 25. So, this would be, they wouldn't face each other for over 10 years. I find it very, very interesting, actually. Because this was leading to WrestleMania 14, so about 11 years, actually, to be more correct. But, what's 11 years? Yeah, about 11 years, yeah. I'm trying to think. This wait a minute, this is 98, 14, yeah, 11 years. Because I'm trying to think of when WrestleMania 25, and yeah, WrestleMania 25 would be 2009. Was it? Because again, I'm trying to measure stuff, and I'm not very successful at it. yeah, that makes it, because 15 was 99, so 25 would have to be 2009. This was a really good match. I really enjoyed it. I thought Jim Ross and, by the way, Jim Ross and Jerry the King, I thought, were really good for most of the night. They were very funny during the mini tag match. Jim Ross was really good in the Vader Goldust match. Really, really good during the Rock and Shamrock. Really called it like a heavyweight fight, and it was no different here. One of the things I really liked that they pointed out towards the beginning, actually, is that Taker's record in casket matches was, I can't remember how many wins they said, but that he was pretty much undefeated except for one time where there was one loss. And Jim Ross pointed out that the only reason he lost that, it took a 500-pound, over 500-pound man and 10 other wrestlers to cause him to lose. Of course, he was making mention to the casket match. I want to say it was, actually, we were just looking up, I believe it's 1994. the casket match that Taker had with Yokozuna. And in the casket match, Yokozuna, along with 10 other wrestlers, which included Faku, Rikishi, King Haku, and several other wrestlers, I believe including Owen Hart and Jeff Jarrett, they all like came in and jumped on him and helped Yokozuna get him into the casket. Of course, this was the point to where, you know, they bring in the casket and Taker says, and then the video screen turns on and there's Taker's like, "This is not the end of me. I will rise." And all of a sudden he rises through the Titantron and a figure rises up or whatever. It's a really cool moment. We were watching it because we were doing our D&D game. It's like somebody like brought it up on their phone. And like, "I think I can find this." So then I brought it up on the network. So you had the commentary was really good. It was a great back and forth match. I love that Taker starts off, and it really is a standard face starts off. Middle of the match is really ran by the heel. Face come back, and then they go back and forth as they build towards the finish. I love that they didn't overbook Triple H and China getting involved. They used them sparingly, and it was really there for support. And there's a lot of good moments here. A lot of good camera angles. One where, of course, it's very funny and interesting to see that ultimately this is also the match where Shawn Michaels hurts his back. And it's one where Michaels gets back body drop over the rope and his back sort of hits the casket. And when you see it, it doesn't look bad, but it's like it caused some major damage. And that actually happens early on in the match. And then sit there and think that he really is like winning the first 5 minutes. So he wrestles another at least 15 minutes. It's a 22-minute match. About 22 minutes and 23 seconds, to be more exact. And so he wrestles a majority of the match after that. And obviously had to be adrenaline, but it's like, that just makes me respect Shawn even more after seeing that. But had the back and forth, there were a lot of great spots. Shawn Michaels with the elbow drop into the Undertaker, into the casket. And then the momentum causes the casket to both drop with them both in there. And the referee was like, "I don't know what to do." Which I think that also leads to the point where Shawn's crawling out, but Taker like rises up and grabs him and like Shawn's scratching. Like, that was a really great camera shot. The jumping tombstone of Shawn into the casket. I also think there was like a choke slam into the casket. Which brings the question, why didn't that cause momentum to cause the casket to drop? But, you know, that's here nor there. That was really, and then of course there was the point at the end where ultimately, and this is of course why they didn't have him do it at the end of the match, where Triple H and China, and of course they had paid off Los Brascos of Sergio Vega and his guys to come and jump Taker, and they're all beating up on him, and then out comes Kane. Of course, Kane, you think, oh, Kane and brother are now together again. Nope, Kane turns on him. And choke slams him, and then tombstones him, and puts him in the casket, and Michaels wins. The one thing I don't like is that you never hear the bell, and that kind of caused a bit confusion for me. And of course, the ending here is that where Kane and Paul Bearer were padlocking, you know, the casket, and I'd be very interested to see how that was done, to see if there was maybe a false bottom there. I think what happened is there was a sort of an escape route underneath to where, where Taker could escape under the ring. You know, when you look at those caskets, they're very big caskets. And when you look at where the seat cushion is in that, there's still room underneath. It's sort of that old school magic trick of, you know, here's Kane and here's the padlock and it's against the ring and Kane they're blocking it. So it's sleight of hand, like, look over here. Don't notice what's happening over here. So I'd be very interested to see how that was done. But overall, it was a really good match. You saw a lot of the same chemistry that Taker and Michaels had that was really good that would really come into play for their matches at Mania 25 and 26. And of course, here we a lot of storylines for Bill. Shawn retaining the title. Of course, Kane setting the casket in a very brutal way. They had a great shot of a kid who was crying, like, what's happening, mommy? But Kane with the axe and everything, and then the fire is like, it's like, that's how you knew Taker wasn't in there. Because, like, yeah, he's getting pretty deep. Taker would be dead by now. But yeah, it was really great storytelling there, actually. So that brings us to the Royal Rumble match. Just to go over down some numbers. Of course, like I said, Stone Cold Steve Austin would win it. He lasted at win number. He came in at number 24, same as Hogan from 91, which was our last review. He would last 50 minutes and 58 seconds. We also had also at 22. I believe it was 22 was Macho at 91 as well, but. Also, Skull, which was at 22, was unable to compete due to injury, which has basically happened earlier in the night. Los Barretos jumped who they thought was Stone Cold, but it was really Skull, because, of course, they both had bald heads. Stone Cold would throw out seven people, would be have the most eliminations. I think followed by The Rock next. Your final four would be Dude Love, Farouk, and The Rock. And by the way, of course, the big thing is Mick Foley's three identities, three gimmicks, would all show up here. He actually started number one as Cactus Jack. And, of course, number one and number two were Cactus Jack and Chainsaw Charlie. Of course, Cactus would be the second eliminated at 9 minutes 41 seconds. He would come back in at number 16 as Mankind, and then come back in at number 28 as Dude Love. Jeff Jarrett attacked Owen Hart, who came in at number 9, and of course Owen Hart would come back in and help eliminate him. Of course, China and Triple H would ultimately eliminate Owen Hart. Though The Rock was the longest at 51 minutes, 32 seconds. Followed by, let me see if I can find here, Blackjack Bradshaw, a.k.a. JBL, at 35 minutes, 45 seconds. And then the third longest was D'Lo Brown, who'd be eliminated. The 16th eliminated by Farouk. He lasted 32 minutes and 21 seconds. Overall, again, looking at the match as a whole, it's one of those things where, you know, Rock came in and then there would be the points where big names like Shamrock would come in. And it's sort of that classic style. Again, and it's not just that it's missing out like the Kofi spots or those amazing near elimination spots, but it's also, again, you kind of feel ruined by recent Rumbles, like modern Rumbles, because sort of the modern Rumble has taken on this identity of, like, there are several things you know you'll see during the Rumble. Of course, there's the story of who's going to win and who's going to go to Mania. But there's the surprise entries, the surprise returns. It was the thing we talk about now, like, who's going to return at this year's Royal Rumble? Who's going to be a surprise debut, AJ Styles, that you're looking forward to? So you have all those things that, like, excite you about the Royal Rumble nowadays. It wasn't quite like that. And again, if there was anything that sort of showcased the sort of faction sort of mentality that WWE was in right now, and sort of how it was mostly controlled by tag teams, it's like, for the most of this Rumble, it's like you're seeing people like, I know he's not going to win it. I know he's not going to win it. I know he's not going to win it. It really, there were very, like, very few people. And it really was Rock, Austin, that you felt the most. And oddly enough, Mick Foley. Especially when he came in at the end, this dude Love was like, is he going to come in for a third time and win all of this? Vader, by the way, was the last entry. Would be eliminated by Goldust, who he beat. Oddly enough, referee Jack Doan was inadvertently kicked by Phineas Godwin during his elimination, resulting he got a concussion because of it. And for the most part, I enjoyed it. Again, the big, really biggest moment was in 24 when Stone Cold came in. And once again, kind of like he did on Raw. In fact, exactly like he did on Raw. Everybody's facing the entryway, and Austin comes in from behind, gives a stunner, eliminates a couple people. I think who he eliminated was Thrasher and 8-Ball. Of course, The Rock. And, you know, it was a very sort of classic sort of 101 contest. You know, Rock thinks he eliminates, after double-crossing Farouk, again, continuing that storyline, which I like. I think Rock thinks he eliminates Austin. Austin doesn't get eliminated. He thinks he eliminates Rock. Rock counters out. Austin celebrating. Just when the Rock's about to hit him from behind, kicks him in the gut, gives him a Stone Cold Stunner, and Rock's like, duh! And then Austin with the back of his head like this, and throws him out and wins the Rumble. Overall, good Rumble. Again, part, I think, what helped it is, again, watching this build-up to it helped it a bit more, because I had more of an understanding of storylines. Not something we've talked about before on this show. You know, there's been a lot of times where I've been watching a pay-per-view and that stuff, and I'm like, it's always, I feel like, I think I would like this match more or like the storyline more if I had watched the lead-up to it. And so there's definitely that thing to where, because I've sort of watched a bit of the lead-up, I've watched the past two Raws, certainly has really helped me with more of my appreciation for this Rumble. That being said, by no means, this is by no means one of my favorite Rumbles. There are a lot of boring spots. In fact, it took me three times to complete. Like, I was watching and then I had to turn it off and then come back to watch it later. It took me three times to watch all of this, because there was a time where I was falling asleep. And it's like, I gotta turn this off, go to sleep, and get up and watch this later. So, by no means is it the most interesting Rumble. Again, it's still that, you know, I come in like a bit of a House of Fury. Probably not eliminate anybody, because I need to, because they're all fodder for, you know, other people. People would be eliminated at certain times by certain wrestlers. Usually continue a storyline or whatnot. And, again, it's more story-based. So, there's not a lot of excitement, but overall, an okay Rumble. It's not one of those Rumbles where I think you have to sit there and, like, oh my god, you absolutely have to watch this Rumble. So, overall, I think it's time to go over moments and matches. Moment number three for me is the Minis Dive Fest, which is just fun. Number two would be Vader's Vader Bomb at the end with Luna on his back. And my number one would be, I call Take Your Pick. Shawn Michaels, all the different maneuvers into the casket by Taker and Michaels. The elbow, the choke slam, the tombstone. Take Your Pick, because they're all fun. And just great moments to see, because they're like, it's like, oh my god, I've never seen that before. Even years later, because there really hasn't been that much of a casket match really used. I can't remember the last time a casket match was used. In fact, the last time I think a casket match was kind of used my memory is Taker versus Henry at WrestleMania 22. Even then, I'm pretty sure there may have been one with Edge or something like that. But I digress. So, but yeah, those different spots are still amazing to look at. As for my three favorite matches, number three is Rock versus Shamrock for the Intercontinental title. Really good, solid match. Number two, again, is the mini six-man tag, which is really, really fun. And I really suggest checking it because WWE has tried a minis division. I know that everybody's PC. Whatever term you want to use, little people, dwarves, midgets. I think sometimes, I know we're in a PC culture, but it's like, okay, what name do you want? Okay, you want this name, this is what we'll call you. Yes, they're human, and call them, but we're trying to find a name for the division. Minis division, I think is what they used. But they tried to do mini divisions in the past, and they've always tried to find a way to use mini wrestlers, because they are fun, and I wish mini divisions could be more successful in this country other than just in the Southwest. Because the minis are definitely a staple of Mexican wrestling. And they're fun to watch. And this by no means is not a boring match. It's very fun. And honestly, it contains wrestling that you won't see in any other type of match on WWE. Even in their failed Cruiserweight division. Though their failed Cruiserweight division have a very fun match at WrestleMania 14. So that's the second match, and of course, number one is the Michaels Taker match, which, like I said, really fun, really great work, had great chemistry together, a lot of great drama, and of course, the storyline building to it was really fun to watch. So that's my favorite match of the night. Overall, again, it's a great sort of snapshot in ways of 98. Of the Rumble. This is a very great snapshot, in fact, of what early 98 was, and sort of how they're starting to try to pull away from that faction and tag team mentality that seemed to dominate. Again, like I said, it's a thing to where we'll watch it slowly transcend from the tag teams and the faction part to being more single-based, to the point to where they kind of went to the other side and they needed more tag teams. But yeah, of course, 99 would see the revival by the end of it of the tag teams with teams like the Hardys and Edge and Christians and the younger generation. And characters like the Dudley Boys, for that matter, who would come in 99. But again, certainly that type of build and everything towards that. So it's a great snapshot of, like, there's some good matches. Really, there isn't a bad match. Like I said, the worst match by far is the tag team match. Because it's just really more of a brawl. And then the second worst match actually is, quite frankly, the Rumble. And that's because it was boring in some places. But if you're interested in seeing Stone Cold Steve Austin, it is an important part of Stone Cold's... match. And, it is fun to watch the match in its entirety because you have the three faces of Foley, Mick Foley coming in three times. It's an interesting sense of the type of wrestling gimmicks that are used. And you get to see wrestlers like The Rock and Shamrock and their early careers and how they built as well. So overall, it's a solid pay-per-view. Actually some really good matches. Not great matches, but really good. I give Royal Rumble a 3.5 out of 5. Royal Rumble 98, that is. It's a solid watch. It's not going to be on my list of... it's like right at the... there's reasons that it's must-see. It's must-see for certain characters and storylines, but the entire thing... there's fun matches to watch, but I don't know if it's must-see. I think somebody who was there during the time would have... if you're one of the people that watched it at this time, you'd have a bit more nostalgia for it. So you may enjoy it a bit more than I did, because I'm probably missing all of that nostalgia because I wasn't there at the time. I think I'm missing something. But it's still solid. It's not awful. It's just not must see. So 3.5 out of 5. Very solid. Some very good underrated matches, I think. Underrated by, again, the Attitude Era and the stories, and again, of course, by the Royal Rumble match. So 3.5 out of 5. Go check it out and make the decision short, because I'm on the fence. Because there's nothing here to sit there and tell me that this is must see, but at the same time, there's elements of it that are must see. So, and ultimately, it's the lead up to WrestleMania 14, which had a lot of major elements to it. So it's worth seeing for that and checking out for that reason. So that is it for this episode of CM Jews Wrestling Reviews. Remember, if you have any emails or comments, there are several ways to contact the show. One, you can email us at absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. You can find us on Stitcher, and I promise I will at some point get started working on that file, the RSS feed, at some point. I keep promising, and it's like, oh, I keep forgetting. You could also find us on Facebook by searching for the Absolution Network. In fact, just do a search for the Absolution Network on Google, and you'll find our Facebook page. And you can always find us right here on the site at www.an.132productions.com. Make sure you check out all our other 132 Productions content. This, of course, includes CM Jews Wrestling Reviews, Tom's Prerogative, which we have a new episode coming out this weekend at some point, Tokyo SOS, which is going to have a re-release episode coming out either same day as this episode or others, and other stuff, Shin Tiger Curl's videos, John Ramos's videos, many more. Check that out. And remember to check out all our friends on the side of the site, Matty J, TWK, the WrestleCast, at WrestleCast@Podomatic.com. Michael Bailey, Views from the Long Box, and From Crisis to Crisis. Scott Gardner and the True Two Freaks Podcast Network. Many others. Check them out. And that is it for this episode of CM Jews Wrestling Reviews. I hope you enjoyed it. Next episode, we cover the Fallout Raw, or the Raw that covers the Fallout from Royal Rumble 1998. Like I said, features the appearance of one Mike Tyson and a certain badass mother effa named Stone Cold Steve Austin has a problem with that. And as far as Rumbles, well, we continue Rumble Month with a look at the Rumble that was almost won by Drew Carey. Yes, that's right. We look at Royal Rumble 2001. So, until next time, my wrestling fans, I want you to remember one goddamn thing about me. CM Jew. I'm the best Jew in the world!
You're all that I have and you're all that I need. Today I pray to get to know ya. Please wanna be close to you. Yes, I'm so hungry. You're like water for my soul when it gets thirsty. Without you, there's no me or the air that I breathe. Sometimes the world is dark and I just can't see. With these demons around all around, I bring me down to negative vibes. I believe, yes, I believe. I say that I believe. I stand among the feet when people are down on one knee. I fight with all of my might to get these demons to flee. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Out of darkness comes light, twilight and through the heights. Crown lights burning up, out of through the twilight. So thank you to my God, now I finally got it right. And I fight with all of my heart and all of my soul and all of my mind. Stealing my love will be holding and sealing. I give myself to you from the essence of my being. And I sing to my God, songs of love and healing. I want Mashiach now. Time it starts a feeling. What's this feeling? My love will be holding a ceiling. I give myself to you from the essence of my being. And I sing to my God, songs of love and healing. I want Mashiach now. Stripping away the legacy and reveal your soul. You gotta give yourself up and then you become whole. You're a slave to yourself and them don't even know. Them wanna live that fast life, but you're free.